You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Hour two on this Monday. Hope you had a great weekend. Boys are here, ready to go. We'll check in with John Smoltz. He was on the call last night. Dodgers over the Braves, and he'll be working the World Series as well. By the way, I'll say this before Smoltz comes on. He's really, really good at what he does. And he's mastered it in a very short amount of time. And it's not like it's a gimmick where Tony Romo will call out the play before the play happens. And all the credit to Tony, because he gave us something different as an analyst. But John just wants you to understand the game. And he doesn't talk down to you. He explains it. He had a quote that has stayed with me. You don't want to lose tomorrow's game today. And that is, you don't want to burn up your bullpen. It was just a small little phrase there. But I just think that he has done such a remarkable job in walking you through situations before they happen and even after they happen, and doing it in a way that he's a companion watching a game. He's not a know-it-all. He's never been a know-it-all. He's got a wonderful sense of humor. He is a know-it-all, doesn't act like a know-it-all. How's that? But John will join us coming up. Dodgers and Rays enter the World Series in very different situations because the Dodgers have all the pressure in the world on them. It's been championship or bust from the day they kicked off the abbreviated season, and they built this team. They spent a lot of money on this team to win it all. Meanwhile, the Rays, high expectations, but they're young and inexpensive, and their pressure is different. It'll be interesting to see how both these teams respond because the Dodgers had to play like the young, scrappy upstarts to beat the Braves. Meanwhile, the Rays almost blew a 3-0 lead to the Astros, but they both deserve to be here. Balanced teams, got a lot of pitching there. And I know we worry about the ratings. I don't care about the ratings. I never cared about the ratings. Even when I was doing SportsCenter or Football Night in America or the Olympics, like, what are the ratings? Because I can only do what I can do. That's it. And watching this game, it's not like the Dodgers and Rays go, hey, we got to kind of sex this up a little bit here because everybody wanted the Dodgers and the Astros or the Dodgers and the Yankees. But I hope we get great baseball. I'm expecting great baseball. And what we've seen so far, there have been a lot of dramatic moments there. Phone calls are always welcome, 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address, dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle at dpshow. McLovin, the poll question from the first hour.
Okay, I put up, without your permission, a slightly strange poll question, but relevant. If it's a coin flip, do you go for two or kick the extra point? Because that seems like the number one issue of the NFL season so far. There was like six games yesterday that had controversial two-point conversions. And the results are, by the way, 57% go for two.
Well, it depends on how good my team is, how good my defense is. If I'm Romeo Crennel and the Texans, and like I'm listening to Rich Gannon, who's a former MVP, and he says, you know, kick the extra point. So I'm trusting what he's saying in the moment there. And I like when you have a play that you feel like is, you know, the percentages, the odds are in our favor. But I also have to wonder, if we miss this, are we capable of stopping you? Are we capable of preventing you from getting a touchdown and the extra point? Now, if you get the two-point conversion, okay, that's different. And plus, as an offense, when you get on the field, you're not necessarily thinking of, we got to get a touchdown. It's, we got to get a touchdown and a two-point conversion. So you raise the degree of difficulty. But in that moment, I would have just kicked the extra point. Tennessee, give them credit. They came down. They scored. Derrick Henry was wonderful. And you start looking at those numbers. If you were going to give out an MVP right now, this is an undefeated team, Derrick Henry would probably be at the top of the list. Russell Wilson has been wonderful. And Mahomes has been good. Lamar Jackson's been good. But you're talking about value. And I have maintained for years now, Russell Wilson is as valuable, if not more so, to his team than any other quarterback.
This is how Russ loses it every year.
I know.
He dominates September, and then, well, we need a new story.
And that's what I said. Hey, you don't win the Heisman in September. You're not going to win the MVP. But we've started earlier and earlier of the coronation of MVP. Like Aaron Rodgers, MVP. Russell Wilson, MVP. And now it's Derrick Henry. But what Derrick Henry means to that team, the defense, Ryan Tannehill, cannot be understated. I'm not saying he's going to win. I'm glad he's getting some attention. He deserves to get that attention because that is a old school throwback running back where guys make a, it's called making a business decision where you decide you're not going to tackle him because you don't want to get hurt. Yeah, McLovin.
You could argue Romeo Crennel did the right thing because he wanted to give Deshaun Watson a chance to win it, go up by nine, because he knew the defense couldn't stop them. So he basically knew they were going to score a touchdown, and they probably couldn't stop Henry on a two-point conversion. I just can't see them stopping them.
I only know what I said in the moment, and that's when Rich Gannon was saying, you know, kick the extra point. So that was – like, I didn't have a strong opinion on it, but I didn't trust the Texans' defense no matter what. Yeah, McLovin.
Similar situation. Ron Rivera went for two at the end of the game in Washington football team versus Giants. People seem to like that, though.
I'm okay with him doing that with that team because that team needs a lift. They need something. They want to know. I mean, what's his nickname? Riverboat Ron. Like he gambles like this. I'm okay. He's trying to set the tone there in Washington. Like this is who we are. By the way, there's two games tonight. It's a 5 o'clock kickoff. Chiefs Buffalo on Fox. 8:15 Arizona at Dallas on the mothership. I saw this story, New York Post, Mike Vaccaro, argues Trevor Lawrence could stay at Clemson instead of going to the NFL if the Jets have the number one pick. And I had McLovin check and with Peyton Manning. I think Peyton Manning stayed at Florida one more year so he didn't have to go to the Jets. He was at Tennessee, I should say. He stayed in college, and he couldn't beat Florida. And I think that he decided to come back for his senior year at Tennessee because the Jets had the number one pick in the draft, and I think that might have been Keyshawn Johnson year. And Peyton got drafted by the Colts and a better organization. Yeah, Paul.
It's very similar to the Eli Manning not wanting to go to San Diego. Everyone wrote the story, but nobody has any proof of the story. Everyone wrote the story in 97 that Peyton Manning's father, Archie, didn't want his son playing for Parcells and the Jets. But nobody's got anyone quoted on it. No one's got the story locked. But that's what it's like, the lore of the story now.
The Jets were 1-15 in 1996, and they picked Keyshawn Johnson. But you had Bill Parcells, who was, I think, just taking over there. Can you imagine? Like, there's so many moments that could have changed the history of the NFL if this happened or that didn't happen. But Peyton Manning in New York, as opposed to Indianapolis, and what that would have meant for the Jets franchise. It was great to see Tua. He made his debut late during the win over the Jets. And, you know, he threw a pass, 9 yards. I loved it. Like, of all the plays, that was one of those moments where, you know, pretty special. He got on the field. I think he called his parents from the field after the game, from what I'm told, just to kind of let them enjoy the moment with him. And the guy who was the happiest, Ryan Fitzpatrick, the Dolphins quarterback, when he saw Tua come in, he completed the pass, he had a big smile on his face. It was great to see. Some of the other headlines here, Bama rolls over Georgia. Nick Saban bound to determine that he was going to have negative COVID test. Do it again. Coach, we just didn't do it again. Steelers, Titans, Seahawks at 5-0. And we mentioned the World Series here. And another thing I brought up about the Jets, I don't make a change with the coach and the defensive coordinator because I want you guys to continue to be bad. And if I bring somebody in, you know, some offensive innovator or defensive, whatever it is, I don't want us to get good. Like, I would just say to our fan base, without saying to our fan base, hey, I'm going to keep these guys employed, and it's best for us. They won't be here next year, but the prize is Trevor Lawrence. Yeah, Paul.
And if the Jets get, let's say the Jets got two wins and had the second pick or the third pick, there's still some really high-end quarterbacks there, but not the, you know, I don't know if they could draft Justin Fields and replace Sam Darnold. That might not be sellable. But Trevor Lawrence is that generational guy that blows everybody out of the water, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I'm looking at, you know, there's a couple of organizations that would abandon ship with their current quarterback if they could get Trevor Lawrence. And I look at the Minnesota Vikings. You want to talk about biggest disappointments? Vikings up there at the top. This is a team that was one or two plays away from the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. And then all of a sudden they decided that they were going all in on Kirk D. Cousins, gave him the guaranteed contract. They gave him an extension and throwing interceptions. I thought that they were going to run the football and play defense. Here's Kirk D. Cousins sounding the alarm on the play of Kirk D. Cousins.
You know what? You just have to play well, you know, in this business. And the reality is if the pace, you know, that I'm on in terms of the interceptions, if that were to continue, I won't finish the season. I won't, you know what I mean? So you got to improve, whether it's them telling me, hey, we got to improve, or them pulling me. You got to get better, and that'll be what the rest of the season will be about for me, you know, trying to protect the football as best I can, because when you turn the ball over, you know, it really hurts your chances to win, and I know that, you know, and just need to improve as we look ahead to the rest of the season.
If I'm a Viking fan, I don't feel good after hearing that. Now, I love that he was, you know, full transparency there. Let me know how he felt, heart on his sleeve. But if I'm Kirk D. Cousins or his coach or his friend, I would say, you just got to say, we're going to get him next week. Hey, you know what? We're learning. We're going to get better. We got a lot of talent. We're going to be there. Whatever it is, I need to know that my quarterback feels a little better than, yep, if I keep throwing interceptions, I'm going to get benched. Yeah. Now let's go out and get him. Like, you got the Falcons torched you. Yeah, McClellan.
Wasn't it just a week ago that they kind of beat up the Seahawks and got beat by Russell Wilson in the last second?
Yeah.
So how explain this NFL. They were at Seattle and they lost a heartbreaker, and then they get blown out by the winless Falcons?
I know. But that's what the NFL is going to be this year. Like, we shouldn't be surprised. We talked about the lack of practice, off-season workouts. You couldn't get in, you know, in the building, games being moved. We talked about the number of injuries, soft tissue injuries that we're going to have. All these things have taken place so far. You know, we talked about that you're going to have teams that have COVID outbreaks. There have been that, although it happened sooner than I thought it was going to. This is what the NFL is this year. But we want to be right. We want to be the first to tell you. I told you. And that's why we make these proclamations. Like, are the Packers still good? Is Cam Newton the answer in New England? Are the Rams good? Is Josh Allen an MVP candidate? Have we figured out how to stop the Chiefs? Like, these are all things that have been brought up first month and a half of the season. And the fact that it's week to week, that's, we keep trying to figure out, this is the week I can say this, or it's this. I can make this blanket statement. And we turn out to be wrong most of the time. Yeah, McClellan.
We're definitely crowning someone tonight at 8 o'clock, whoever wins a Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes duel.
You think so?
Oh, I guarantee if Allen wins this, he's back in the MVP race.
That is true. That is true. But I like how all of a sudden, Cam Newton. I'm not quite sure about Cam Newton in that New England offense. I went, wait a minute, wasn't everybody in on? Yeah, Belichick did it again. He's winning this battle with Tom Brady. And then Brady, all of a sudden, the Buccaneers play great. Brady back in the Super Bowl hunt, MVP. Aaron Rodgers, not an MVP anymore. Yeah, McLovin.
If Andy Dalton wins for the Cowboys tonight, are people going to make it a referendum on Dak Prescott?
They already have. They have. Because what's going to happen is the Cowboys are going to give the franchise tag to Dak Prescott. And, you know, then you're going to, it's already started. That's what's going to happen, because the Cowboys are going to make a business decision and say, you know, I had this injury. We want to see if you can play at a high level again. And if Andy Dalton plays well in that division, let's say they win 9 games, 10 games. Like, it might sound preposterous, but the reason why I picked them to go to the Super Bowl is that I looked at the NFC East and I thought that's the worst division in football. The Giants, Washington, they're in Philadelphia banged up. That I thought Dallas could win every one of those games, maybe lose one of those games. And now I'm asking them to win five more games, six more games, and have 11 wins. Host a first-round playoff game. You got a really good offense, and maybe, you know, that defense plays, you know, above, you know, the expectations. I mean, that factored into this. With Dallas, everything went wrong, you know, with the injuries on defense, injuries on offense. Now Dak Prescott is out. The division is still there for the taking. Somebody has to win that division. And I think Andy Dalton will be fine as the quarterback. Now, I'm not asking for 300 yards, but I think if Andy Dalton just is Andy Dalton of the Bengals with all of those weapons, then they're going to win that division. They're going to be a playoff team in a season where they would have no business being in the playoffs, considering everything that's happened there. Yeah, McLovin.
Everybody says that Dak is going to get the franchise tag, but I think it's like $41 million.
Yeah, 40.
That's insane. Like, why?
But that's the going rate.
But $41 million for a guy coming off that injury seems like pretty radical to me.
Well, it's either 40, cut him, or $120 million. Those are your three choices with Dak Prescott.
You don't think they can get him on the cheap?
They tried. They tried.
Not really. They offered him $33 million. He's like, that's not cheap, and he said no.
Well, I know, but that was cheaper than the going rate for some. I mean, he was off to a great start, and he bet on himself. You were going to have three receivers probably with 1,000 yards, a running back with 1,000 yards. I mean, he was going to have the numbers there. They were going to win that division, and he would have bargaining power there. Now it's just going to be, you know, we're not quite sure. And that kind of injury, they're going to franchise him.
But I think if they franchise him, I mean, their cap is really screwed.
Oh, I know.
40 out of...
Yeah, because Jerry paid everybody else. Hey, Amari Cooper, 100.
Man, they would like to get rid of that contract already.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. More phone calls, best and worst of the weekend. We'll give you our best and worst of the weekend. And I'll take the Cleveland Browns and Baker Mayfield to task coming up as well. John Smoltz joins us next here on the program. We'll talk about the World Series coming up on Tuesday. It's 19 after the hour. This is the Dan Patrick Show. I'm going to save you money. The average person saving $400 a year. Pure Talk USA. If you're on the big carriers, they hook you in, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile. They charge you obscene monthly fees for data you never need and perks you'll never use. And if you go through your bill and you itemize and you go, wait a minute, what am I paying? Why am I paying this? Pure Talk USA only charges you for the data you need. They're on the exact same tower, so you get the exact same great coverage at half the cost. Unlimited talk, text, 2 gigs of data, $20 a month. So you're saving about $400 a year, the average person is. You can get unlimited talk, text, 2 gigs of data, $20 a month. And from your cell phone, you dial #250 and just say Dan Patrick. You automatically save 50% off your first month. So #250, say Dan Patrick, and you'll have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from Pure Talk USA. #250, say Dan Patrick, Pure Talk USA. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com. Or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. I mentioned this earlier. People will remember the Dodgers' dramatic win in Game 7, but it's hard to discount that the series seemed to turn on that Mookie Betts catch that turned into the double play. That was Game 5, third inning. Marcell Ozuna was called out for leaving third base. Like, that never happens in the big leagues. And the fact that it did in the National League Championship Series. From that point on, the Dodgers outscored the Braves 14-5. Of course, you had the base-running double play last night. That was certainly big as well. John Smoltz was on the call, and he makes it look easy, folks. It's not that easy, but that's why John's one of the best in the business, the Fox analyst and Hall of Famer. You can watch John and Joe Buck. They call the World Series on Fox. That begins tomorrow night. Plus, MLB is airing live coverage before and after every game on MLB tonight. John, how are you feeling today?
Well, I'm feeling good, especially, you know, I'm not going to lie, especially that there's not the West Coast to East Coast travel that would be pretty interesting when you think about the Dodgers and Tampa Bay. So both clubs get to stay here, and both clubs get to probably play their best baseball, considering there's not a lot of travel to go on.
But also how you set up your rotation and your pitching staff, that you're playing just about every day. I think there's a break after game two and game five, but we've seen the depth take over, that you need to have those arms because you were playing every day. How does that affect the World Series, in your opinion?
Yeah, so, you know, what the Dodgers did, or what they were capable of doing, you know, they might have done some things a lot of people thought were a little bit outside the box and didn't have to do, but they had so much depth that it actually won over in a seven-game series where there were no day offs. This time, I think you'll have the flexibility to play it closer to the way that you would typically play a World Series. You won't need five starters. You may not need four. But what I was interested to see, and played out the way I thought it would, when starting pitching, which in this playoffs was not a strength for a lot of clubs, the two better teams of starting pitching ended up being right where they needed to be. And I thought that the Rays, with their great bullpen, but their great starting pitching is the reason they're there. And certainly they went full bore. They went five games and seven games to get here. The Dodgers had a relatively easy route until this seven-game series, and they were pushed to the limit by the Braves in a way where I don't think anyone could have anticipated the series to go the way it did.
There's pressure on the Dodgers, but what is that like when you're expected to win?
It's real difficult because, you know, there's so much talk about history and what you haven't done, and you forget that the year you had was pretty good. And I think that, you know, having lived it through 95, getting into the 95 World Series, we had lost two previously. And, you know, people were starting to compare us to teams that, you know, whether it was the Bills, which I never understood. But that pressure on you causes you to have to think about things you never would think about. You really only want to think about competing and executing. And I think the Dodgers have handled it pretty well, knowing that they had the best team, but knowing also that all eyes were on them waiting for stories to be written about what they haven't done since 1988. And those stories are still there, but their relief is obviously greater today than it was 24 hours ago.
And it always goes back to Clayton Kershaw. He has a chance to kind of rewrite his playoff resume or the history of that. He pitched well earlier in the playoffs. Like, what is it about Clayton when he gets in these moments here? Because this is habit. It's not a coincidence anymore. What is it about these moments for him?
Well, individually, everything seems to go with that heavy weight of what the collective performances have been for him in the postseason. And what I mean by that is they're individually different, and they collectively add a narrative that, you know, isn't totally fair, but you can understand. And if you're Clayton Kershaw, you want to shed some of that pounds that he's been carrying. And he doesn't have to do it anymore. He doesn't have to carry the franchise. He doesn't have to pitch on 3 days rest. Doesn't have to log 240 innings. And I think everybody rises to the occasion when they face Clayton Kershaw. And the pitching performance you could not have expected from Bryce Wilson, but he did it. He actually outpitched Clayton Kershaw. And the pressure builds the closer the game is, because I think Clayton depends on his intensity, and his want to is so great that sometimes I think the want to and the desire can outrun your performance. And that is just something no one could understand, because not a lot of people are in his shoes, where the world's greatest pitcher in the regular season has impossible standards to live up when it comes to the postseason. But you're right that it does fall into the execution level, and it hasn't been like it has been for the regular season.
But you find that there are certain teams, like the Houston Rockets, to me, are built for the regular season. There are teams that are built. Milwaukee Bucks were built for the regular season. When you get into that, you know, five-game, seven-game series where teams really do their research on you, their homework on you, you pitched with Glavine and Maddux. They were average in the postseason. They're Hall of Famers, 300 wins in the regular season. You maybe not as dominating in the regular season, but we're dominating in the postseason. Like Curt Schilling, like there's certain pitchers where you go, you know, why and why not?
I think the biggest or the easiest answer would be as perfect as those guys were in the regular season. There's a tendency that you think you have to be even more perfect, and there's no way you can. And to be that finite, you can put so much attention on the detail and forget that you are the pitcher you are. And I used to think, you know, when you get to the postseason, the strike zone changes a little bit, the attention to detail, nobody approaches the at-bats like they would in the regular season. Look, I watched Maddux and Glavine carve people up, and rightfully so, because their ego when they got to the box was, I'm gonna take this guy deep, and they ground out. Well, in the postseason, you change. And if you don't kind of have the stuff in the zone, it definitely makes it tougher. And I think there's a combination of a lot of those things. But the other thing is there's a lot of close games that don't go your way, and they just add to the narrative. There's been three significantly weird games that Clayton pitched and would never pitch again. Two of them against the Cardinals. I think seven runs in an inning where he had the game totally won.
Yeah.
And those things are the things that you remember. And those are probably the hardest things for Clayton to go, oh, no, here we go. But I can promise you, you know, leading into the Braves game, he dominated. And no one, you know, you just think about the Braves game, but he dominated in the postseason, and he really pitched a much better than the results against the Braves.
Your thoughts on Mookie Betts as an all-around talent?
Yeah, he's always been that guy for me that if you had to pay a ticket to watch him play the game, I'm glad he's an outfielder. Because if he's an infielder, he'd just be another average guy in the shift. But as an outfielder, he gets to showcase his talent, his speed, his arm, you know, rob home runs, use the speed on the bases. But if he was an infielder, he would just be another guy in the shift that we would talk about the shift and not the athletic talent of the player. And I'm telling you, he'd be a center fielder on most teams. He happens to play on a team where, you know, Bellinger is just as good of an outfielder. And I think the catches he made, the hardest catch was the one against Ozuna. That was an impossible catch that he made look easy. The game changers are the one you talk about. You know, he made that catch. It was difficult for Ozuna to see if he had caught it or not and got caught in between. But the game-saving catch in the game seven, you dream of those. You dream of a home run robbing catch that turns around the series, and the Dodgers did just enough to make the momentum switch their favor.
I had not heard that before, that infielders don't get the chance to really showcase their talent because we have shifts on just about every other batter there, whereas the athleticism can be on display in the outfield because that's where most of the balls are ending up. You know, they're fly balls, home runs, those kind of things. Is that what you're saying about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you used to have a decided advantage when you think about traditional positioning. When Ozzie Smith was a shortstop for the Cardinals, they had an advantage over the rest of the shortstops. But now if Ozzie Smith was playing today, he'd be playing more second base than he would shortstop or in the hole. So it definitely takes away some of the athleticism of the showcasing of the individual. So no doubt an outfielder can shine.
Are you going to play golf today?
I'm not. I'm taking today off.
Wow, John Smoltz not playing golf today. Big story here.
I'm a little gassed, and we got one day off to get ready for the Rays. It'll be a heavy work day today and tomorrow, and then you'll see some relaxation.
You got a golf course there in Texas you're going to go to?
There's a ton. There's so many good golf courses here. And you know the beauty of being here 27 straight days is that you get a chance to visit some of those golf courses that are close. Dallas National, Trinity Forest. Yeah, there's some beautiful golf courses here.
Who do you have in the World Series?
Well, as broadcaster, I have the Dodgers and the Rays.
Who do you think's going to win between the Dodgers?
As a broadcaster, I don't make those predictions. But I will tell you this. I will tell you between the two teams, I still maintain. I know it's well documented that the Rays hit homers and strike out a lot. Maybe don't have the highest batting average, and the Dodgers are the opposite offense. I still think that when it comes down to two great teams, two best records in baseball, I think the team that puts the ball in play the most is going to win. I really do. It has been that case for the last 15 to 19 years.
Yeah.
The Rays have a chance to buck the trend. I think they're the top third. I think they're third most strikeouts in all of baseball. They have a chance to win a World Series in that category that we haven't seen in 20 years.
Now, when the shift happens and the third base line is open and all you have to do is lay down a bunt, John.
Yeah.
Why don't guys do that?
It's not, there's no reward for them. The clubs don't want them to do it. It's not because they can't do it. It's just that there is no emphasis on that being a priority. when the game has the ball in the air for homers and strikeouts and walks, that's what you're promoting. That's what the guys are perfecting. Look, velocity is the way it is. People will say, well, it's just not that hard. I mean, it's just not that easy. Anything that you practice is easier than if you try to do it when you've never done it before. And I think that's the difference. And when you have situations, I get nervous in the booth. I'm not pitching anymore. I get nervous in the booth in the eighth or ninth inning and see that and go, I could potentially lose a game on that, a swing by accident. But when you have the numbers that show and the players just unwillingly do it, then there's no real risk in the club defending the way they're defending.
Man, it's just a different game. It's crazy.
It is. There were some situations in this series where you saw the bunt come into play more than ever. The Braves tried it a couple times. The play that the first and third with one out or less is you can't defend it. You just impossible to defend the safety bunt. You just can't defend it. And nobody really has that up their sleeve yet. Hasn't practiced that for, you know, it's like the NBA team that doesn't play defense in regular season. And you go, okay, play defense in a postseason. Well, that ain't going to happen. It's you are what you are, and you have to be able to maximize the guys in their position. The most I've ever been shocked is that runners on first and second, and most clubs are teaching the guy, get the ball off the ground. They do not hit the ball on the ground, because they'd rather you strike out than hit into a double play, have two outs versus one out. So that's just the way it is, and players have learned to adjust accordingly.
Does it matter when you're throwing 96, 97, 90? Like, these guys, they've seen these pitches. So it's not like, you know, when we're growing up and somebody threw gas, we're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, 95 is nothing. That's like off-speed pitches to these guys. But when does speed get somebody's attention in the batter's box?
I think when you have two or three pitches you can throw for strikes. If you've got a 98, 99 mile an hour fastball, you could throw it 20 times in a row. It could be the fastest pitch in the world. They're going to hit it. If you don't locate it, they're going to hit it. If you don't do something else to show that you can throw another pitch, you're in trouble. It doesn't matter how hard you throw.
Yeah.
The thing that's amazing to me is that when you have all this velocity and all this effort, you know, you're just asking guys for short sprints, which I get, you know, at this point. I still think the Dodgers do the best job of making you really earn everything that you can. They have not – it's been amazing what they do collectively. It's not like just one or two guys. So you're going to see that same discipline on display this week. And I've never seen a collective arms the Rays have. I've never seen this many filthy arms in my life, 100 miles an hour, 99, 98, and they're coming out left and right. Matter of fact, last series they brought in two guys I hadn't even heard of. That's how many guys they've had. And so that's why the homework I have will be – but they have the ability to mix and match with velocity. But you have to have a secondary pitch.
I think you're tipping your pitches right now, John.
I might be.
I know.
I might be tipping. I got to check the video after we're done here and see.
Yeah, I'm going to – yeah. Who would tell you you're tipping your pitches?
Well, I wish I would have learned – someone would have told me in 2009 when I was with the Red Sox. But usually you have your collective.
Okay,
guys.
We have a little bit of time. Tell that story. And I stumbled upon it. I didn't mean to bring it up, but you're on the mound pitching for the Red Sox. And
well, I'm not very good at this point, trying to come back from shoulder surgery. And then it's a relief to find out when I got to St. Louis, my first bullpen session, Chris Carpenter said, "Do you mind if I tell you something?" I said, "Absolutely." He goes, "I know every pitch you're throwing." I said, "Oh, well, if you know every pitch I'm throwing in a bullpen, then everyone knows every pitch I've been throwing in a real game." And it was with my glove. And I changed that in the bullpen. And that very first game for the St. Louis Cardinals, I think I still hold the franchise record. I struck seven guys in a row out for the Padres. And it was such a relief because I was grinding so hard for Boston. I wanted to do so well. And it felt like, now looking back, everybody knew it was coming. They were hitting balls out of the stadium. Wow. So when you're broke down trying to perform, you're thinking, well, certainly somebody could have picked that up, but it didn't happen then. And thankfully, Chris Carpenter saw it.
Do we look at the Astros differently after this postseason?
I think you have to. I mean, no one, you know, I understand what, if I was a player, I would encourage everybody to just kind of be as quiet as you need to, let your playing do your talking. I think what they were able to do, they gained some respect. I don't think they gained a lot of respect from fans that still don't want to hear you know, give it a year. Next year, I think everything will be back to normal. They played an incredible series. And yes, they had a lot of people hoping things didn't work out for the obvious for what they went through and what they were part of. But collectively, I think they gained a lot of respect.
Thank you, John. Great job. And we'll look forward to talking to you and listening. World Series starts Tuesday night with Joe Buck on Fox. Thank you, buddy.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
That's John Smoltz. I forgot all about the Red Sox appearance. Poor John got on the mound, and everybody seemed to know what he was throwing. And it was batting practice. That's where you're going, damn. Like, pitchers know when somebody is on top of a pitch that they shouldn't be on top of. Like, there's something where somebody is getting stealing a sign. There's an indicator. There's something that's amiss. And, you know, when you'll say, oh, that guy was right on top of that pitch, you know, where he fouls it off. And pitchers will know when somebody squares up and they're just tattooing you that you know something's wrong. And I found that there was a player on the opposing team who felt bad for the pitcher after they played and told the pitcher that he was tipping his pitches because he felt bad because he said, you know, it wasn't like we want the competition there. You know, we knew, and this is a great pitcher. They both since retired, but he went over to him after the game and said, you were tipping your pitches. He said, that's all I told him. I didn't tell him how he was tipping. I just said, you were tipping your pitches. But, yeah, they know. And there are guys, there's these guys that you would never know that that's their job, just to watch the pitcher's glove or his foot on the rubber. Like sometimes you go to the left side, go to the right side, and it'll depend on the pitch you're throwing. Your arm slot. Like just the smallest things, they'll break you down. They'll break down the footage. They want to see exactly how you're releasing the ball. My fastball and my chain. Johan Santana, I still go back to this. Harold Reynolds broke this down on SportsCenter. And he said, I'm going to show you the release point of Johan Santana. And I want you to tell me what pitch you think he's throwing. And he showed me side by side his fastball and his changeup. And they were the exact same position. Not off, you know, an inch, nothing. And he said, that's why he's so hard to hit. When you see the release point and it comes out of his hand, you don't know if it's 72 or 92. And Johan Santana had a hell of a run there. I think after he threw his no-hitter, he basically threw his arm out. All right, phone calls coming up. We'll give you our best and worst of the weekend. I'm going to take the Cleveland Browns to task at the top of the hour. Back after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Give you our best and worst of the weekend. Let me get to Al in Atlanta. Al's been holding a while. His Falcons got a win. His Braves bowed out. Hey, Al, how are you?
Hey, Dan. Surprisingly good for what happened. I mean, you know, we were playing with house money considering we only had one day one starter start in the postseason. But I got an apology for Paulie and the best and worst.
Okay.
Paulie, I'm sorry. I still don't agree with your comment on Friday, but it did not merit my jumping on you the way I did.
Wait, what was his comment?
Oh, he compared Bobby Cox to Dave Roberts, and I said that shouldn't even be a thing.
Well, you know, Bobby's a Hall of Fame manager.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you just named Bobby Cox, and that's fine, but you got to say Dave Roberts, manager of the L.A. Dodgers.
Okay, all
right. It says it all.
All right,
but
so
okay. Best.
There you go.
Yeah, but right. Okay, my right. Best.
Okay.
Clearly, Raheem the Dream's Atlanta Falcons coming through and showing you what a properly coached team can do, even though it was against the Minnesota Vikings.
Okay.
And my worst was I feel like an Alabama fan called me on Saturday and told me they were gullible on the ceiling, and I spent the entire day Saturday walking room to room trying to find it because I was dumb enough to actually think Nick Saban was not going to be on the sideline for a Georgia-Alabama game.
Oh, thank you, Al.
My call, Danny.
That was the easiest bet of the year. We're like, is Nick Saban going to be involved in the game? Yep, somehow, some way, he's going to. That poor person, you know, whatever technician, whoever was administering the COVID test, and then Nick probably coming back every hour, do it again. Like he was going to have a three negatives before he could take the sidelines. And it didn't matter. Like that, yeah, Alabama's offense is unbelievable. The defense is still an issue there. I did watch a little bit of Clemson versus Georgia Tech. And they put up 51, I think, in the first half. Like, that's when you could score 100. You know, the all-time scoring margin is, what, 212 to nothing? Is that Georgia Tech versus Cumberland College?
Oh, yeah. Like 226, maybe.
It's either 222 or something like that, or 212 to nothing. And that's when I thought, you know what? Maybe the Clemson, you know, turns it on Georgia and puts up a hundy on them. Yeah, McLovin.
Man, I had Cumberland in the points that day. That
oh, you
was
did?
Rough.
Yeah, yeah. And it was Cumberland in 200. And you saw you know you feel pretty good going into that bet.
I think Syracuse is getting 200 against Clemson this weekend. Wow. I'm not sure.
What is the line on Syracuse against Clemson?
I heard mid-40s.
Mid-40s.
But I got to double check that because that seems nuts.
All right. Best and worst of the weekend. Todd, I'll start with you.
And that segues nicely into my best of the weekend. I'm going to give it to Liberty running back Shedrow Lewis. Carried the Flames on his back. 10 carries, 170 yards, 2 touchdowns in the Carrier Dome. 38-21 over Cuse. Liberty is sneaky 5-0. Mm-hmm. Worst of the weekend, 18th-ranked Tennessee, a no-show, losing at home 34-7 to Kentucky. Wildcats had back-to-back pick sixes in the 27-point victory. Biggest blowout of the Vols in 85 years. First time they won at Tennessee since 1984.
McLovin?
Okay, I'm going to jump on the Zach Wilson bandwagon.
Okay.
Just because I barely saw him, but NFL draft guys are saying...
He'll be one of the top five quarterbacks drafted.
I just looked at a picture of him. He looks like he's 12 years old, though. He's a very young-looking
BYU.
Guy. Okay, my other best is Chase Claypool. Sorry, Claypool, the Steelers receiver. His nickname is Mapletron because he's born in Canada and he plays like Calvin Johnson Megatron. That's a good nickname. Apparently, they said he didn't like it. He wanted to be Air Canada, but Juju said you cannot be that because Vince Carter is already that.
Yeah. Mapletron.
Mapletron is great.
That's wonderful.
Wow.
Seton O'Connor Jr. III.
My best of the weekend is that in their first game with fans back in the stands, the Philadelphia Eagles, their fan base, got into a fight. It's their first game back with stands. They're socially distanced. The guy had to climb down. When you watch the video, the guy had to climb down like 15 rows of stairs doing that like big step over in order to go fight the guy that he was looking for. Philadelphia is just...
We're back to normal in Philadelphia.
Truly one of a kind. Yeah, someone said nature is healing itself.
Yes.
My worst of the weekend is Case Keenum. And not actually Case Keenum. Because he's fine. He's nice. And it's not anything to do with his play. But just the fact that the Browns were like, you know what? Baker Mayfield's getting the crap beat out of him. Let's save him and put in the other guy. Let him get beat up for a while.
Yeah.
What?
Poor Case.
Dang, man.
Steelers put a beat down on Baker Mayfield.
You might want to block TJ Watt at some point, sometime.
Yeah. That's a tough loss for the Steelers, losing Devin Bush. That kid's good. Out for the year. All right, final hour coming up. We'll get to Paulie's best and worst of the weekend. What is wrong with the Browns? And is it just Baker Mayfield? My thoughts coming up, top of the hour. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.